There we go. And officially welcome, folks. Warm welcome to everyone. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance. And welcome to the May 2019 Action Call. We're so grateful that you're with us. And let me just go over the agenda, and then we'll move on from there. The next thing that's going to happen after the agenda review is I'm going to introduce Patty Latai, and she's going to introduce Lynn Lee, our special guest. Then Lynn's going to speak for a little bit. I'm going to mute everybody because I'm hearing some background noise. Okay. Done. All right. Might be a little more clear now. So as I said, Patty's going to introduce Lynn Lee, who's our special guest for the evening. Lynn's going to speak for about 10 to 15 minutes, and then we'll have another 10 or 15 minutes for questions and discussions with Lynn. After that, we'll hear from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. I believe Nancy Merritt is going to give that update on the Department of Peacebuilding and also talk about our Mother's Day activities, an update on that, and then we'll segue right into coaching on this month's action. So all of you who have been registered for this call more than a half hour in advance should have received an email from me with two links. One link is to the action sheet for tonight's call, and the other link is to a restorative justice fact sheet with statistics and information about restorative justice programs nationwide. So please, sometime in the next 30 minutes, access both of those things. When I tested that email, it didn't come through for me as an active hyperlink. I'm sorry about that. So you may have to copy and paste it into your browser to get to those two documents. So again, you got an email from me as of 35 minutes ago that's got the action sheet for May, and it also has a restorative justice fact sheet, and we're going to be reviewing those during the second half of the call tonight. So after we have some coaching on that action, we'll invite field shares, anybody who, among you who's got news that you want to share, announcements, activities in your part of the world. We'd love to hear about them, and then we'll close with a quote. So that's the plan for tonight, and once again, as always, it's a pleasure to be with you, to be part of a community that is focused on positive, proactive solutions, things that are actually workable and effective towards building peace. So I appreciate all of you for taking part in that and being a part of that group. So now I'd like to introduce my dear and highly esteemed colleague, Patty. As I mentioned earlier, is our council lead on our leadership council for the cornerstone of humanizing justice systems. For those not so familiar, we have five cornerstones: cultivating personal peace, teaching peace in schools, empowering community peace building, humanizing justice systems, and fostering international peace building. Those are our five cornerstones of peace building. And Patty leads us in the area of humanizing justice systems. Patty is a trained professional mediator and also a facilitator of restorative justice circles. She was the executive director of Full Circle Restorative Justice, Full Circle Restorative Justice in Salida, Colorado. And then she took a sabbatical from that to finish her book called Pause for Peace. So Patty is a pioneer in the area of bringing service dogs, service animals, into restorative justice practices. So you can read about that in Pause for Peace. So then she came back to Full Circle Restorative Justice as the program coordinator and has continued to be our council lead. And I'm going to welcome her to introduce our special guest. Welcome, Patty.
Great. Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate the introduction. And I'm also very, very happy to be here and with everyone on the line, and also thrilled to be introducing my friend and esteemed colleague, and also a mentor, Mrs. Lynn Lee. And Lynn and I met probably about 7 years ago now when I was attending a high-risk victim offender dialogue training in Colorado Springs. I would say that Lynn is the individual who is one of the most well-known here in progressive Colorado, RJ style, which would be, I would say, the hardcore restorative justice is what Lynn does. She's been working in RJ, restorative justice, for the past 18 years as a community volunteer, a victim advocate, a facilitator, a trainer, and director. She is a retired special education teacher and holds a master's degree in education administration. When I met her, she was the chair of the Pikes Peak Restorative Justice Council, and they actually began in 2007 and operated through 2015, and she was the chair, and now she continues to be an active board member there. She's also the coordinator for the Manitou Springs Restorative Justice Project, in which she works closely with the court and police departments. She has successfully facilitated over 500 restorative justice conferences and has worked with courts, the schools, the Colorado Department of Corrections, and the Colorado Youth Corrections in implementing and facilitating RJ and restorative practices. She is the recipient of a 2013 Pikes Peak Restorative Justice Leadership Award and the Peace Alliance 2015 Restorative Justice Peace Building Award. And Lynn has facilitated the first high-risk victim-offender dialogue in the Colorado Department of Corrections, which is huge. And she continues to successfully facilitate high-risk victim-offender dialogues in the Colorado prison system. She was appointed to the Colorado State Restorative Justice Council in 2013 and continues on the board. And that is a very key group of individuals who assist all the RJ programs in Colorado and implementing RJ legislation around the state of Colorado. She is also a board member on Full Circle Restorative Justice, which I have been a part of, as Dan mentioned, for the past, 13 years now. And she is married to Senator Pete Lee, who is one of the main individuals who have actually formulated and helped bring into legislation RJ-related issues and types of legislation that aid not only restorative justice programs, but also doing his part to help humanize the justice system as well, specifically in Colorado. And he was one of our guest speakers here about, I think, 8 months ago. So we are, and I particularly am very grateful and appreciative for Lynn's work and what she's done to move RJ forward in Colorado. And I'd happy to introduce her. Welcome, Lynn Lee.
Well, thank you so much, Patty. That was nice. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Is there a place you would like me to start, or would you like to start with a question?
We're thinking that maybe the best use of our time here, because I know it's kind of limited, would be to have you kind of share what's going on for RJ within the state of Colorado, and maybe that's impacting others at the national level as well. Would you be willing to do that?
Okay.
Awesome. Sure. Thank you.
I do want to say that it was Sunday. Pete and I were watching 60 Minutes, and there was this, I don't know how many of you saw that, but there was a great high-risk restorative justice segment that they really did a wonderful job on. And then just an hour later, right after that was over, Van Jones was on with one of his segments. So all I could think about is, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just really excited about where restorative justice is moving to. And there was a time when I never thought I would see that. So I think it's really exciting. So in Colorado, I could talk a little bit about the national conference. Is that okay? In
Please.
Denver?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the national conference, National Association of Community and Restorative Justice, is collaborating with Deb Witzel and I. We're the co-chairs, and that is going to be held in Denver from June 15th to 16th. We are full, so registration has been cut off, but we have, I think, a wonderful agenda, and I'm really excited about what the conference is going to look like. We have 120 breakout sessions. We have 40 shift and share segments, which are like short videos about new programs that are going on. Adam Foss is our keynote speaker, and he's, if you don't know who Adam is, he's a prosecutor out of Boston that has a fabulous message. Another piece that I'm really excited about at the national conference, we have 8 gentlemen who have been previously incarcerated who've been practicing since January, and they are going to tell their stories with local law enforcement. So I think that will be really powerful. There's a victim panel and just a lot of exciting things. So I can't wait, actually, to see all of my most wonderful restorative justice friends in Denver in a couple weeks. So that's one really exciting thing that's coming up. And maybe I could just talk a little bit about legislation. So my husband, Pete, is a state senator now. He was in the House for 8 years and just got elected to the Senate, which is great because now he only has to run every 4 years instead of every 2 years. But their session just ended and he passed some restorative justice related legislation and also a lot of criminal justice reform. So those, that would be his passion, is criminal justice reform. So all, I think there's so many pieces of legislation, but some of them that are really exciting to me, I think, is our state passed legislation to decriminalize drug possession. So any drug possession is now a misdemeanor instead of a felony. I'm sitting here at a community corrections facility, so it reminds me that they also passed a bill so that parolees in Colorado can vote, which hadn't been the case before. Yeah. There is a pretty big juvenile justice bill and a lot of money that the state is going to put into juvenile diversion and restorative justice. So that's really exciting. The other bill that was passed last year that I think is, it's just sort of amazing to me what this created. So the legislature took money out of DOC, and they did that by reducing parole. So if somebody was going to be on parole for 6 months, they reduced it to 5 months and 2 weeks or something like that. So they reduced everybody's parole by a few weeks and took all of that money, which was millions of dollars in savings, and gave it to 2 really poor parts of Colorado, Aurora, Colorado, which is just east of Denver, and Southeast Colorado Springs. And they developed these community boards and decided what those 2 communities needed, which is different for each of them, in order to reduce crime in their neighborhoods. And then they took all of the money and put it into organizations who applied for grants to provide those services. So part of it is money to start new businesses. So for entrepreneurs, and you know, a friend of mine started a barbershop that is also a community center. Mm-hmm. So he does restorative circles in his barbershop. Pretty cool, I think. But there's all sorts of organizations that are contributing to those 2 communities. So it's giving back the power to communities to decide what they need to reduce crime in their neighborhoods. So that bill now has been in implementation for a year, and maybe I'll be able to keep you posted and tell you, you know, where they have to gather statistics. So what those statistics show, but yeah, so there's some exciting things that are happening in our state, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It sounds like it. Lynn, I'd like to ask, since something we're going to be asking our folks to do, we ask on a pretty regular basis for our folks to engage in conversations with their members of Congress. Usually it's the U.S. Congress. Occasionally we're asking to do something on the state level. So I'm curious if you have some insights about some of the advocacy process that may have gone into getting any of these bills passed. If for folks on the call that are thinking about talking with their members of Congress about a bill, can you give us any insight about what those conversations may have looked like in Colorado and how that process may have gone?
Yeah, so Pete works with a lot of different organizations around the state, especially around the criminal, well, he does some business work too, but most of his work is around criminal justice reform. So organizations will bring him bill ideas and they work with him in getting DAs or other groups of people that might be in opposition to a bill to try to work together to, you know, figure out what's going to work for everybody. So I think that piece is really important. You know, I think we sit in our living rooms and look at Washington and believe there's no collaboration, but really, I'm sure Pete would say, you know, that the best bills are those bills that have bipartisan support. So I think as citizens, what we can do is bring good legislation and then help legislators to bring together the right people to get it passed and really focus on working together rather than on what separates us.
Thanks for that. So we have about probably 10 or so minutes for other folks that might be interested in having questions or joining the conversation. There's a hand raising feature on your Zoom app. If you're on your phone, you can press *9 and I'll see that as a hand raised. But if you're on video, you should, you might have to click on the menu, the three buttons menu to find that hand raising feature. So if you have a question or you want to join the conversation, go ahead and raise your hand and let us know. Meanwhile, while we're waiting for that, I'm curious, Lynn, or getting ready for this conference must be huge. Oh, Geralyn, are you raising your actual physical hand? I think that's what's happening. Oh,
I couldn't find the button on my computer.
That's fine. That's fine.
Anyway, wanted to say a hi to Lynn. I'm really looking forward to seeing both you and Patty in Denver. And I'm really excited to hear about Pete being elected to the Senate. That's fantastic. And all the wonderful legislation that he's done. So I just wanted to say hi and thank you so much for being here and looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Oh, you too, Geralyn. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks, Geralyn. I'm going to go ahead and mute you again. Sounds like you're in an active place. And I saw Gail McNulty also had your hand raised. Go ahead, you're unmuted.
Oh, hi. I'm actually totally new to this group, although I'm familiar with restorative justice. And I've been working a lot with groups, including the Poor People's Campaign, just locally, but also climate action groups like Sunrise and others who are really, and Extinction Rebellion, and even actually Al Gore's group, they're all really bringing the institutionalized racism and the inequity issue and environmental justice and climate justice to the forefront, which is amazing. And I'm just curious if your group is doing anything to cross-collaborate and sort of coalition build with other groups like this?
Go ahead.
I was going to ask, when you say your group, are you asking about, which group are you talking about?
I guess I'm speaking about the group that I joined the conversation through, which is the Peace Alliance.
Okay. So the Peace Alliance, we have lots of alliances with different organizations that work in different areas. We have a sort of a background campaign around the implementation of lynching memorials, for instance, based on the Legacy Museum and Memorial in Birmingham, or Montgomery rather. So we've been connecting with other groups that are advocating along those lines. That's just sort of one example within one of our cornerstones. I don't know that we have we're pretty broad and diverse in our approach. So there are lots of connections that are stronger at times and then are sort of more in the background at times. But in general, we do a lot of alliance building and we're always learning and growing together. Sort of a short answer.
And I didn't know to what extent you've been following these other groups and sort of the current, where we are with the climate conversation, but it's sort of being defined as a resurgence of the civil rights movement, this moment in time, and the need to really find the intersectionality with all of these things, because humanity and the rest of life on our planet is literally in dire jeopardy. So it's sort of being seen as a kind of a final moment of opportunity to really make some of these things actually happen.
Yeah. Lydia, do you have any thoughts about that?
I think about the national conference, and you had started a question about that, Dan. So it's really been for Deb and I think a couple years of aligning with different groups of people and different interests. So that environmental piece has certainly come up, and we've really tried to be as green as possible in our approach to the conference. But yeah, I agree. I think Gail is your name. That is, yeah, seems like now would be the time to decide if we're going to do something about that or not. I think working with so many people nationally, there's just so many, Dan, maybe you put it well, there's just so many interests out there and so many important issues out there. And trying to accommodate everybody and find a way to be really inclusive.
Can I share one closing thought on that?
Sure.
So I attended Al Gore's Climate Reality Conference in Atlanta in March, and they intentionally put it in Atlanta because they wanted to bring in a more diverse audience. And Reverend Barber from the Poor People's Campaign, if everyone's familiar with that, was pretty front and center at that conference. They did on Thursday evening, they did a interfaith gathering at Martin Luther King's church, and it had maybe 15 or 20 faith leaders from various states. And it was a moral call. It was a call for moral revival around the climate conversation. And then the next day, Reverend Barber did one of his things that he did was called Fusion Politics. And he told a story of being in North Carolina, and he'd been doing his campaigns on the Capitol steps there, the Moral Mondays. And a group had invited him to come and speak to a congressional district that he knew was an all-white racist district. And he went there. He was joking about being a little afraid to go there, but he did. And it was a small group of maybe 12 people sitting around the table, and they were coal miners. And so he talked to them about, I know that your sons and your husbands are dying of black lung. I know that the corporation's stealing, taking away your benefits, and kind of went down a laundry list of ways that this community was suffering. And he said, in one district over, there's this African-American community, and they're dying of cancer, and their kids all have asthma, and they've been drinking the dirty water and all of this. And so we kind of pointed out this common suffering, which is really what the Poor People campaign is about. And he said that he had another speaking engagement coming up in a couple of days, and was worried that his crowds had been dwindling, and he knew the press was coming, and he was worried that, it might not be a good show. 10,000 people showed up. And from that one small meeting of 12, coal mining leaders, they went out, and this group that came was 90% white coal miners. And that was the only district in North Carolina that didn't elect a Tea Party candidate in the next campaign. So it was sort of like, that's the idea, like really, and this is where restorative justice could be so important, because, you know, really bringing together communities of people that traditionally hate each other and yet are suffering in over similar circumstances or in related circumstances, and kind of using that as a way of uniting our completely polarized country as we move toward, 2020 and, of course, beyond, to try to really reinvent civilization as we know it. But I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah, I'll just pick up on that. I tend to agree that part of what's drawn me to this field is I think that our capacity to have these conversations, to reach across what seems to be a divide and to hear each other and to find cooperation is one of the most key sources of leverage for any social movement, any progress, is for us to be able to bridge perceived oppositions. So that's part of why I dedicate so much of my waking energy to this field and this area, this way of having conversations.
Yeah, and I can't recreate it, but Reverend Barber was also able, within like 30 seconds, to go down a line and connect all the dots to, you know, from the refinery being located in your neighborhood and the asthma and that and the fact that your schools have been underserved and all of this, you know, the school-to-prison pipeline and then the kids selling drugs. And, you know, he was able to connect all the dots, which really truly showing that it is really one big conversation about inequity and injustice and racism. And we can't solve any of these problems until we really get at the heart, you know, the roots of the problems.
Okay. Thanks for all that. Anybody else like to have a question for Lynn or add to the conversation about restorative justice? Lynn is one of the chief organizers of the National Association for Community and Restorative Justice Conference that's coming up in just about 3.5 weeks. And now it's exciting. We've got just a few more minutes if someone, Terry's waving her hand. Terry Mason, one of our board presidents. Welcome, Terry.
Hi. Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Terry.
My question to you is, because your husband has been so masterful in creating policy priority around restorative justice, what do you see as the common threads in that? How can we encourage our elected officials to look at restorative justice as being not only viable, but essential to save lives and save money?
You know, he has this way of speaking about it, you know, and I probably couldn't repeat verbatim his speech, but, you know, he would, to a progressive person, he would talk about, you know, humanity and have that approach. To a libertarian, he would talk about giving power back to communities and individuals. You know, so he just has a way of approaching people who come from different points of view and fitting the restorative justice model into their perception of life and what's important. And, you know, I think it is really important for us to find ways to bring our message to people so that it resonates with them. I guess, you know, the truth is, in my little space here, our DAs are really punitive and really difficult, and we have not found a way, you know, so there are always those individuals or those groups of people, probably more individuals, who we're not going to convince. But I do think that there are ways to approach a lot of people that will give them a message that resonates with them. So I think it's really finding that you know, and listening. So when you're talking to somebody, you can figure out where they're coming from and what's important to them. And then talking about, for me, it's my passion, restorative justice. So talking about my passion in a way that they can understand and take in. Mm. And I think it's also about not being, you know, there will be a bill that comes up that, you know, by the time it goes to the House and the Senate and through committees and every place else that it goes, it doesn't look like it did when it started. But I think, you know, I think it's really understanding that it's about taking steps. It's about moving forward, and not being, you know, stuck with your point of view, but being really willing to bring other people in and listening and finding a way to integrate what they need into the piece of legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Terry. That question, I think, was perfect. And Lynn, I loved what you said. Just to remind folks, when I hear something that strikes me as particularly poignant and important, I like to remind people that this call is being recorded, so you can listen to it again. You can share it with folks that need to hear it. But I think what we just heard in terms of listening to your legislators and their staff, this is what I heard, hearing what's important to them and really being present to their priorities, and then being willing to speak about your passions, about why you care about what you care about. And then finally, knowing that it's a process, that you may not get everything that you want in this one bill, but just that a lot of it is about kind of continuing to move forward, to take little victories and keep going. I see someone managed to raise their hand on from a call calling in. It's 510-237-9663. I'll unmute you. Oh, I shouldn't have given your whole number, sorry. 510-237.
Hi, Dan.
Oh.
This is Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just wanted to say to Gail that on our Northern California, on our California monthly calls, we have featured some folks from Sunrise in trying to make the connection between, well, we're calling it the Earth piece, but also you'll hear about our Mother's Day pie meetings in a minute, but one of the folks from Sunrise is going with us to our East Bay pie meetings the day after tomorrow. So that will be definitely a presence and a connection there.
Thanks, Nancy. Okay, well, I am deeply grateful to Lynn for joining us. Lynn, you're more than welcome to stay for the rest of the call, but I understand you're in the middle of a get-together and a process and a bunch of learning stuff right where you are, so you might not have the time to stick with us. I'm going to hand this over to Patty to say a final thanks and farewell, but I'm really glad to hear from you, and I look forward to seeing you in Denver in a few weeks also. Oh, Patty, I'm trying to unmute you. There you go.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. We greatly appreciate your presence and your insight and the information you provided. And the work that you do is so critical. And the fact that you are so involved and engaged here in Colorado as well as nationally, I think it serves so many individuals, youth, families, our incarcerated brothers and sisters. And it's just the work that you do inspires me and so many of my fellow peace builders. So thank you for all that you do to help and serve others.
Oh, thank you so much, Patty. I appreciate that. You guys all have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, Lynn. You too. Give our love to Pete.
Peace out.
What did you say? Peace out.
Peace out.
Peace out.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Now we're going to shift right back over to Nancy, who we were just hearing from, with an update on the Department of Peacebuilding Committee's work, and then right on into including the work of the Mother's Day Piece of the Pie campaign. So welcome back, Nancy.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn, if you're still on. I really appreciated that segment of the call. As most of you know, the Department of Peacebuilding Act was reintroduced in February by Barbara Lee, and we spend the first few months of every year on Season for Nonviolence and gaining co-sponsors for the bill. And now we have kind of morphed into our season where we focus on Mother's Day pie meetings. With the idea of going to our local local offices of our legislators and advocating that peace wants a piece of the federal budget pie. So right now we're in the midst of that. And so far during this time, we've added another three co-sponsors. I've heard back from, we've had meetings and are in the process or either have had meetings already in quite a few in California and East Bay and San Diego and Sonoma County and Georgia, Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Mexico, South Dakota that I know of. And as we go over our action, we'll see that it's not too late. We look at it sort of as a season. You don't have to do this right on Mother's Day, but as a season and a good excuse for going to your local offices and talking with them about peace building. So we're in the middle of that. And then our national Department of Peace Building group is in the planning for advocacy days in Washington, D.C., which will be September 23rd that week, and then we may have some activities before that also, but we should be getting out a save the date email soon, and we hope as many of you as possible can join us for that. It's a really fun time going to Washington and visiting. Last year we visited probably almost 140 offices of senators and representatives. So we hope you can join us for that. And then in California, we're engaged, I'll be very brief on this, but we're in the middle of, we have a bill that's essentially a state, analogous to a state Department of Peace Building called AB 656. And maybe a little bit later in the call, Geraldine can talk a little bit more about it, but it's passed two committees in the State Assembly. It's now in the Appropriations Committee of the State Assembly. It'll be voted on Thursday. We sent out an e-blast on Sunday, so if any of you can call the chairperson, Lorena Gonzalez, I'll give you the number. It's 1-916-319-2080. Encourage her and her committee to pass the bill. Then it'll go on to the floor and onto the Senate. It's got a bunch of more steps, but it's a very good bill. And we've also, in the meanwhile, during our pie meetings, we gained a Senate co-sponsor or author of this bill. So we're excited about that. And let's see, what else do you, should I talk? How do you want to do the action part of this, Dan?
Well, a couple of different ways. I want to bring people's attention to the documents, the action sheet. I mentioned earlier in the call that you all should have received links or URLs for the action sheet and also for a fact sheet. And then we can do a role play of calling for an appointment. I know you suggested that maybe Deborah would want to do a role play, but those are some ideas I have. You tell me what you think, Nancy.
Is Deborah on the call? Deborah, are you on the call?
I do not. Let me see. I haven't seen her name.
It would be a 4-something number, Atlanta number.
404?
Possibly.
Let's see. I see a 404-964. Thanks for bearing with us, everybody. Let me unmute that number and see if that's Deborah. 404-964, and then I won't tell the whole rest of your number on the national call.
Hello.
Oh, it was she. Good job, team. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Dan.
So what do you think, Nancy? Should we role play making a call to schedule an appointment with your member of Congress or their staff locally?
Is that what would you be willing? I know we didn't exactly plan this, Deborah, but would you be willing to, I guess Dan, he's very good at being there. Recipient of calls, would you be willing to be the person who's calling, Deborah?
Okay.
All right. Okay. So I'd love to start these role plays with ring, ring, because I'm on the phone. And so this is Deborah calling to make an appointment to meet with somebody in the local office to talk about peace building. And so this is how it might go. Whenever you're ready, Deborah, go ahead with ring, ring. And who are you calling first? Which office? What person's office?
I will call Lucy May Bath.
Lucy May Bath?
Yeah, Lucy May Bath.
May Bath, okay.
Okay, am I supposed to know the person I'm calling or not?
No, I don't think so, unless, yeah.
Okay.
Let's say you don't.
Okay. Okay, ring, ring.
Hello, Lucy May Bath's office. How may I direct your call?
Yes. My name is Deborah Paz, and I'm calling from the National Department of Peacebuilding campaign, but I'm here in Atlanta. May I please speak with your district director, or who is your district director, first of all?
Our district director is Thomas Johnson, and he's not in today, but can you tell me what you're calling about?
Okay, I am calling from the National Department of Peacebuilding campaign, and we would like to visit your office. We would like to come in and speak about a National Department of Peacebuilding committee, or excuse me, a National Department of Peacebuilding Act of 2019, and we will be bringing a pie. The pie is just a symbol. It's a symbol for Mother's Day, since Mother's Day began as Mother's Day for Peace, and it's also a symbol for the federal pie chart. So could we come in and for a visit and speak with someone, ideally the district director, but someone else if he is not free to do that? And we will be visiting on the Thursday before Mother's Day.
Okay. Can I connect you with our scheduler, and you can find out what times we have available? If you're limited to Thursday, I'm sure we can find somebody to meet with you, but they can help to plug you into a time of day. Would that be all right?
Okay. That would be excellent. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just transfer you. Hi, this is Dan. I'm the scheduler. I understand you're looking to make an appointment to visit the Congress.
Yes. Yes. Now, this is just an appointment for a staff member, it's not an appointment for Congresswoman May Bath. I mean, at all. This is, I'd be happy to meet with a staff member.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the Congresswoman is not in town locally right now, so that wouldn't be available anyway. But she'll be in town in August during the recess. So for now, yeah, we'd be happy to arrange for you to meet with a staff member. And you're talking about this coming Thursday?
That would be yes.
Okay.
This coming Thursday.
And can you tell me about how many people will be in your group?
One or two.
Okay, one or two. Will you give me an email, and then I can send you the form that we'd like people to fill out when they make appointments to come visit?
Sure. Now, yes, and your email is?
Oh, my email, if you want to send it directly to me, sure. It's dan@... blah 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 .congress.gov.
And what about okay, yeah.
And I'll be happy to file that, and I can tell you now that once I reply to you with that form, you can fill in a slot for any of the hours on Thursday afternoon from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, or 3 to 4, and we'll be able to accommodate that.
Excellent. And I will send this email to you at dan.com@mail.health.gov.
Perfect.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dan.
All right. You're very welcome. So Deborah, I always like to do an instant self-debrief. What were the things that you did on that call that you're glad about? What are the things that you remember? Sometimes it's kind of a blur, but is there anything that you remember that you did that when you did the real thing, you want to do that again?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that everybody understands that all congressional email addresses, or just about all congressional email addresses, are firstname.lastname@mail.house.gov. That way you can find somebody's email address on the internet.
Okay.
So I wanted to get that part. The second is pretty much everything. I hesitated a little bit. I think I said committee instead of Peace Building Act.
What did you do that you liked? What are the things that worked?
I think everything was all right. I think that the reality is most of us, when we attend, we probably are by ourselves or with one other person. I attended all of mine by myself. So I wanted to let everybody know that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it okay if I name some of the things that I specifically liked that you did?
Okay.
Okay, good. So these are not necessarily things that you would think of. It might seem simple, but it's pretty important. You said your name, and you said where you are. So you're letting their office know that you're actually in the district. You say I'm here in Atlanta, and you let them know that you're interested in a visit, and you let them know what it was about. You told them the topic of the visit. And you never know. Sometimes the person that's on the phone with you will have an interest in that topic or be able to direct you to a person within the office who's specific to that topic. So that could be important. And you specified when you wanted to visit. So just some simple, straightforward things. But your name, where you are, so the fact that you're a constituent, and your intention to have a visit and the topic of the visit. Those are all, you know, I would want to underline those.
Actually, I did say Atlanta. I am not a constituent, okay? I mean, a lot of times in the cities, you have several different districts in a very small area when you have a very populated area like this. So, no, I'm not. But I did visit that office, and I did visit the constituent. I walked in a dropped by, and they got an impromptu meeting immediately. He saw that Department of Peace Building, and he was the constituent services staffer, and he immediately said constituents had been asking for it. And he knew, you know, I did say, you know, I don't live in the district and all that. He didn't care. So it was great. You don't have to live in the district, but you do want them to know. You know, if you email or something, just give them your zip code so they, you know where you, if you're emailing.
Right.
So.
All right. Very good. Anything that you would have done differently that you want to do less of?
No. Okay. No, I can't think of anything. I just want to say that it's very important to follow up. So that everybody know how to follow up. Yeah,
great. I didn't catch it. You might have said it. I don't remember. Did you see the bill number? That can be handy if you're letting them know that you're talking about an actual bill that is in.
H.R. 1111. I always say H.R. 1111. Yeah, I've probably forgot it.
You probably said it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So. A lot of the, I think most of my appointments and all that, most of my contact is email. In fact, I had sent an email to the district director before I arrived, but I didn't get any feedback or any reply from them. So I just called the office and didn't really get any. I got somebody, but I just hung up because I had to get on the bus. So, said, you know, goodbye. So I just walked in, and it went great, and it really, really went well. And the guy cleared out an office for us to meet. So you never know. There's three kinds of visits you can have. You can have a scheduled meeting, a drop-by with an impromptu meeting, or just a drop-by.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you can actually schedule in advance and have a sit-down time. You can show up with materials, just prepared to leave materials, right. But then maybe you get surprised and there's somebody available to meet with you.
Right. I did three visits, and each one was a different one. So I did one of all three.
Got you. All right. Terrific. Well, yep. Thanks for your help with that. I'm going to go ahead and do something else. Nancy, unless you've got another idea, I want to bring folks' attention to the two action sheets.
Okay. Could I just quickly say, looking at the action sheet, on the pie one, scheduling meetings is one part, or, you know, going and taking pies, which is really lots of fun, and they love you for it. And the second part is we asked people to call. We were calling it the Mother's Day 11 for HR 1111. And on the action sheet, their phone numbers, there are phone numbers for those people. And this has been fun and successful. These are all former co-sponsors, and we have gotten one back on already, Danny Davis. So if you call him, you could just thank him.
Perfect. Yes, awesome. So folks who have looked at that document already, maybe are aware of what Nancy was just describing. And we're asking folks to do one or both of two things. One is to, and forgive me if Nancy just made this totally clear, but I'm just underlining it, I guess. Go ahead and schedule an appointment, like Deborah just role played. Schedule an appointment, go sit down and have a conversation about peace building, why it's important to you, begin to educate your member of Congress and their staff. And the other part of it is to make a phone call to some or all of these 11 people who are former co-sponsors of the bill and in previous sessions, and asking them to sign back on. Have I got that right, Nancy?
Yes, that's right. And just to emphasize, you don't have to do this now. I mean, we've done so-called pie meetings as late as August, which is actually a good time because often the congressperson is in district, and sometimes you can meet with the congressperson per se. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's something to consider too.
Right. I want to bring folks' attention to that other sheet, the restorative justice fact sheet. And if you have already inserted that URL or clicked on the link and can access it and take a look at it, please raise your hand, because I'd love for somebody to read aloud part of it. This is a fact sheet that the Peace Alliance put together in cooperation with the National Association for Community and Restorative Justice. So I worked on this a couple of years ago. So the statistics are not the past couple of years, but they're still highly compelling. Is anybody looking at that fact sheet and willing to read from it a little bit, just to help us get a sense of what's there? Because I think it could be a powerful tool to illustrate for your members of Congress and their staff what are the effects of some of these peace-building tools that we're talking about. Restorative justice is a whole realm of peace-building. Some of the statistics that are available looking at restorative justice programs show tremendous cost savings and community enhancement. So raise your hand if you're looking at that fact sheet and willing to read aloud just one or two of those statistics for us. Okay, maybe it'll be me. So on that fact sheet, there's a basic definition for you at the top of restorative justice. Let me grab that. The definition that we have there is, the term restorative justice practices refers to facilitated group practices that emphasize shared understanding and repairing any harm experienced in connection with the actions of one or more individuals. Restorative justice practices may include community conferences, victim-offender dialogues, family group conferences, or restorative circles, and have been increasingly used in juvenile settings and school systems. So there, just by sharing that information with a staff member of your member of Congress, you may be educating them about a whole realm that they could be well served to know about and help them to serve us. And the first example is from Colorado. It's after the Longmont Community Justice Partnership in Longmont, Colorado, implemented its community restorative justice program, recidivism rates among youth dropped to less than 10% in its first 3 years, compared to a countywide rate of over 50%. So the recidivism rate or repeat offense rate in Boulder County, Colorado was over 50%. And then Longmont Community Justice Project within 3 years, I think it's actually within 2 years, brought their recidivism rate down below 10%. So when it costs sometimes as much as $100,000 a year to incarcerate a person, and you can bring repeat offense down from 50% to 8%, you're instantly saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that fact sheet is full of statistics like this, which just show the dollars and cents and human value of peacebuilding tools, which the Department of Peacebuilding would promote. And when you go to these meetings, you're also welcome to advocate for some of the other priorities on our legislative slate, and you can find those under the Advocacy tab on the Peace Alliance website. We're getting close to the end. Nancy, anything else you want to say before we open up to anything anybody wants to say about their...
No, just have fun. It's really, the PI meetings are really fun, and they welcome you probably more because of the PI than because of you, but that's a good reason. So
yep.
Anyway, have fun doing the meetings.
Thanks, Nancy. And any questions about any of that, nancy@peacealliance.org for guidance on these meetings where we typically bring a PI for the office staff and talk about peace building and how we'd like for peace building to have a bigger section of the federal budget PI. And we give some specific ways they can do that. So we just have a few minutes for shares from the field. If folks have peace building activities in your congressional district, in your community, in your neighborhood, in your schools that you want to let us know about, raise your hand either electronically or physically, or with a *9 on your phone, and I'll be happy to recognize folks. Just a couple more minutes. Anybody have news or announcements or events or requests for your peace building world? If anybody on the call has not yet liked us on Facebook to help you keep up to date, please go ahead and do that. We'd love to be in conversation with you all. So seeing none, is there any last word that you want to have, Nancy, before we bid farewell, maybe a minute early to this family?
Yeah. Okay, so I want to thank Deborah. She's a total pro. She's been doing these meetings and drop-bys for years. Mm-hmm. And just want to thank you all and thank you for the restorative justice part of this call. It is something we bring into all of our discussions when we go do our PI meetings. So thank you. And we'll be seeing Barbara Lee's staff on Thursday, so she's the author of this bill, so we'll be reporting back to her about all that's happening with Peace Alliance and with the PI meeting.
Wonderful. Well, Nancy, thank you so much for your work, for joining us, and for joining us month after month with updates, and for continuing the work and the fun work. I'm glad that you're having fun with it. I have a quote we can... Go ahead.
I just have to say this was a bit of a sacrifice as the Golden State Warriors are playing right now.
Right. Thank you for suffering for us.
I know. You do what you can.
Yeah. Tough choices. I hope you catch some of the game. So closing quote before we part, before I'll unmute everybody so you can say your farewells to each other. Is Martin Luther King is someone who said the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And I like to think that maybe that justice is restorative justice in some form. So you're now all unmuted, and I'll say farewell and thank you again.
Thank you, everyone.
Hi, thank you. Pache, Benny, everybody.
Take care.
Thanks, Conchetta.
Yeah. How you doing, Daniel?
I'm good. Nice to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's good to hear your voice too, and Nancy and Geraldine and Deborah and everybody, and Gail. She was good too. All right.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Take it easy. I do want to say I have one representative who says, "Don't bring the pie."
Don't bring the pie. Oh,
I guess the wine instead. I told him. Okay.
What's on your
mind? All right. Good night. Have a good one.
You too, huh?
Bye.
Hey, Dan, can you stay on 1 minute longer when everyone else is off, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Patty, we can just talk on the phone if you want.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
All right. Bye, everyone. Bye.